From the National Catholic Register, this is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
This week on Register Radio, we're devoting the entire program to the immigration crisis on the U.S.-Mexican border. Jeanette DeMello talks with Rio Grande Valley's Catholic Charities Executive Director, Sister Norma Pimentel, Register reporter Peter Jesserer Smith, and ethics professor Dr. Christopher Kaser. Welcome again to Register Radio. It's a co-production of EWTN and the National Catholic Register. I'm Tom Price, along with Jeanette DeMello, editor-in-chief of the Register. Thanks for joining us. Our first guest, Sister Norma Pimentel, is a sister with the Missionaries of Jesus. She's the executive director of Catholic Charities in the Rio Grande Valley, and as such, oversees the charitable arm of the Diocese of Brownsville. Catholic Charities services include emergency assistance, housing assistance, clinical counseling, pregnancy care, immigration services, and jail ministry to all four counties in the Rio Grande Valley. Sister Norma is right in the middle of this current immigration crisis. We're very blessed to have her with us today. Sister Norma, welcome to Register Radio.
Thank you so much.
Now, Sister Norma, it's been a very busy time there on the U.S.-Mexican border. I know that Catholic Charities has been involved in this work, but let's first start with talking about who are the women and the children who are migrating, now being brought to centers there in the Rio Grande Valley, and you have been working with them. But how many women and children are there, first of all?
Yes, Jeanette, we have women and children that come every single day. And the very first day, in June the 9th, we welcomed 200 families.
Wow.
And since then, it has been an average about 150 to 200 folks that come every single day to our site to get help.
Now, to what site are they going? Is this a Catholic charity site or is it a government site?
You know, it is a parish hall downtown McAllen. It is the closest church that is to the bus station, so I called the priest, Father Tom, asking him for permission to borrow his parish hall before this effort, because we were seeing that these families were needing help and volunteers wanting to help. So we started to coordinate that effort, centering in this location and being able to bring in volunteers, resources, and then inviting the families from the bus station that were dropped off by Immigration Border Patrol to be able to travel. We were able to say, come to our parish hall, you can get rest, you can wash up and eat and come back to the bus station and travel. And so that's what we were doing.
So where do they go once they are there with you in your parish hall?
Well, they stay with us just for a couple of hours. Basically, what we just do is once they have their ticket that they're able to purchase through their families, then they come to the parish hall. We give them a couple of hours just for them to rest, refresh themselves, wash up and eat, and give them provisions for their travel. And so they're just with us less than 10 hours, you know, not more than that.
Okay.
And
okay.
So they go back to the bus station and they travel to different parts of the United States, anywhere where they have families, where they will be able to report back to immigration here and later on after
okay.
their life.
So these are those that have already been processed by the government officials and now have a date in which they are supposed to be responding
That's correct.
The government's demands. Okay. Very good. And who are these women and children?
You know, there are people, families, children from Honduras, Guatemala, some from El Salvador, but for the most part, they're from Honduras and Guatemala. They are families who are sharing their stories of great pain and suffering from their countries, where they found a need to just save their children, come live and hope to find safety and a life for their children because they're afraid for the life of their children.
Now, how old are these children that are coming?
Oh, they're small. The children we see are babies in their arms. Of the moms, maybe kids, 2, 3, 4, maybe at the most 10 years old.
Okay. And are you also seeing unaccompanied minors?
No, we're not. We only see the women and the children that are released by immigration. The unaccompanied children are kept in holding facilities, which we hope, and I think we've already made arrangements with the Border Patrol officials to allow us to enter those facilities and do pastoral care for the children. So we're beginning to do that now.
So you have been given permission to enter
those
facilities? Yes,
we were. That was so wonderful that I was able to arrange with the chief agent patrol so that we can get permission. And anybody interested in doing this with us, no matter what denomination they belong to, they can come and join in this effort to visit every single site and be present to the children in a pastoral, caring way.
Now, I know in an interview that you did with Peter Jesser Smith, a Register reporter, you said there are quite a few volunteers who are working with you. How many volunteers have been
helping?
Oh, there's
so many volunteers. At times, there are so many. It's amazing the overwhelming response of how wonderful the community is, not just locally from here, from our area, but, I mean, I just got a call just now before I'm here with you from New York. A group of people want to come down and volunteer and spend some time with us so they could also help. And so we have volunteers from everywhere.
You know, that response is so different from what we have seen in mainstream media. I mean, you've seen quite a few protests. They started with buses being turned back in Murrieta, California.
Yes.
Why is the response so different?
I don't know. I think because, for one, once you see the faces of a child and realize that this is a person, this is a human being that needs care, that needs attention, and we're welcoming and offering compassion to them. And I think everybody will respond so favorably, so good to anybody else that finds themselves in this situation. So I just see a lot of goodness come from our community.
It's good to know.
If you're just joining us, this is Register Radio. We're speaking with Sister Norma Pimentel, a sister with the Missionaries of Jesus.
Now, Sister, I know this isn't necessarily your job, because your job is to provide humanitarian care, to be the charity arm of the church, but how does this stop? How do these children who are pouring across the border with their mothers and sometimes unaccompanied children, how can we stop this so that their lives aren't in danger?
You know, I have no expert on legislation or any aspect like that, but I do know that these families are coming for a reason. The situation in their countries is not good, and something needs to be done to help these countries be safe. And mm-hmm. if we don't do that and help these countries find solutions for them to be in their homes and not have to migrate, they are still going to come. And so even if we return them back to their country and try to send messages that they mm-hmm. shouldn't come, I mean, it's like if it's a burning building and they need to get out. And if we don't help turn off that burning building and make it safe, they're going to continue to come. And so I think that we as a nation and as America need to work together to find solutions that help be a safe space to be living, you know.
Now, you in your past have done work in other countries that caring for people there. What is the condition there? I mean, what are they fleeing from?
Well, the story that we hear from the families that we're helping is stories of great fear, and because of the fact that there's all these gangs and groups of that are after their children, and the children are killed if they're not recruited. And I had a mom that was there one night, and she was pregnant, and she was ready to deliver. And I was asking, why would you travel in these conditions? And then she actually took a whole month to travel through all the countries to get to the United States. And I said, well, you see my little girl? She was right there beside her, beautiful little girl, and she was just 3 years old. I said, look at my hand. It's completely destroyed because somebody broke into my house and with a machete was just going to strike my daughter, and I just put my hand out to protect her, and they just totally destroyed my hand. And if I don't leave, I know that my daughter would not be alive today.
Sister Norma, is there some reason, and this is what I hear all the time, why now? Why not a year ago or 5 years ago? Is there something that is causing this tsunami of people
yes.
coming here now?
Well, you know that this migration has been happening already for the last 2 years,
uh-huh.
and it's just increasingly gotten more massive and bigger as the days go by. And I think as the days go, the violence and the fears are stronger, and so the more they see there's nothing there to stay. You know, they cannot leave. They don't. They cannot work. They cannot have money because it's all robbed and taken away. So there's no life. There's no reason to stay. And so the more they stay, the more they realize that they just have to get up and go. And so the more people come, I see the more people get encouraged to just come.
Yeah, Sister Norma, certainly we will be keeping you in prayer and all that you're doing there with Catholic Charities. Is there a website if people want to lend some assistance? Is there a place
yes,
they can go
course.
On the web?
We have our diocesan website that you can go directly to CDOB, Catholic mm-hmm. Diocese of Brownsville, CDOB.org, or our Catholic Charities, RGV.org website as well. Those are two possible sites that you can go. We also have the Catholic Charities USA website that also is open to take response as far as donations or any way that anybody wants to help.
Very good. Sister Norma, thank you so much for all that you're doing, and certainly God bless you and all your hard work.
Thank you for your prayers and your support.
You're listening to Register Radio here on EWTN. Right now we're going to bring on reporter Peter Jesserer-Smith. He's been following this border crisis. He is a staff writer with the Register. Before that, Peter was a Catholic freelance journalist for both the Register and Our Sunday Visitor. He is a 2011 graduate of the National Journalism Center. Peter is a graduate of Christendom College, where he co-founded the student newspaper and later served as its editor. And as Jeanette was saying, he interviewed Sister Norma a little while back. Peter, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me on.
Peter, as you heard, we did just speak to Sister Norma. She was a source in one of your articles about how dioceses are responding to this immigration crisis. You also talked at that time with the Tucson bishop, Bishop Gerald Kakanis, about how his diocese is responding. Can you tell us what he had to say?
Well, the last time I spoke with Bishop Kakanis, he said that the situation had stabilized with the women and children that they've been that have been turning themselves over to Border Patrol, and which they've been able to help. Right now, what I remember him saying was that they had about 80 women and children who had been in need of transitional housing, and with the rallying of the community, they had brought it down to between 6 and 10. So it was much more manageable. But the real thing that he was trying to do was get FEMA to recognize the need for the church to come in and provide the unaccompanied minors spiritual and emotional care and programming. Many of them are very traumatized by the journey. At least some reports elsewhere have indicated that as many as a third of these girls who are coming have been raped or abused on their trip. So there's a great need there for the church. But for some reason, as Sister Norma also indicated, there hasn't been a great deal of, I would say, eagerness on the part of Department of Homeland Security and these agencies to involve the church in that. But it seems that locally the church has been able to make some progress in certain areas. I still have to check in with Bishop Kakanis again to see if that situation has improved, as it has for Sister Norma. But I actually spoke recently with Representative Chris Smith, a Republican from New Jersey, who has been following this. He's a big author of anti-trafficking legislation. And he said he's been very concerned that many churches and charitable agencies have not been able to have access to serve the needs of these unaccompanied minors who are traumatized, as well as elected officials and journalists. There's been a lot of tight control.
Right. Well, hopefully that's that control is releasing a bit. It sounded like Sister Norma said they were able to get some Catholic Charities representatives into some of the detention centers, so maybe there's some relief there. We'll have to follow up with our sources on that. Yes. Now, Peter, you have said, and Sister made some reference to the situations in the homeland, and you have reported about those situations in the homeland, and some people that you have interviewed have talked about the fact that these are refugees, not necessarily simply migrants. What is the argument for that classification as refugees rather than migrants?
Well, there's a lot of data to suggest that they are refugees and not simply migrants, as often this discussion gets framed. There's an excellent study out by Cato Institute which asks, where are the unaccompanied minors from Nicaragua? Mm-hmm. And the fact is that there aren't many of them. Big reason why? Nicaragua doesn't have the gang problem that El Salvador and Guatemala and particularly Honduras have. If anything, one of the things that they've been showing is the murder rate in Honduras has been skyrocketing. I believe off the top of my head, it was 90 murders per homicide rate was 90 murders per 100,000.
Wow.
It makes Honduras the murder capital of the world. And some of the stories that I've been told have been about women who just picked up their children and fled because their sons had been shot for refusing to join a gang.
Mm-hmm.
Fathers who took their wives and children and fled. One of them, his wife was abducted, raped, and didn't make it. He doesn't know what happened to her. Another situation is that these girls get targeted for prostitution by these gangs, or something very perverse called sexualized killing, where a gang member likes them, and basically the intent is to rape them, sometimes gang rape, and then kill them and throw them in a plastic bag. Like one 15-year-old girl told the Washington Post she got out of Guatemala because her uncle told her she had to go.
Wow. Yeah, so they really are responding to situations in their country that need to be handled. Is our government recognizing them as refugees and thus treating them differently than they would simply illegal immigrants?
Well, there's under U.S. law, there's a great possibility that they should be treated as refugees. One of the qualifications for refugees is that they have to, quote, show that they were persecuted or fear persecution due to race, religion, nationality, political opinion, or membership in a particular social group. And so, in a sense, refusing to join a gang or to be part of it, there's a real sense of fear for their lives, could make them refugees.
Okay.
The problem, however, is that ultimately a good immigration attorney is probably going to tell a lot of them that.
Okay.
And the signals from this administration, which has deported the most illegal immigrants, undocumented migrants, more than any other administration, is that they're changing the rules so that they can deport, mass deport these migrants from Central America as easily as they can migrants from Mexico. So, no, the indication is not that they're going to be treated as refugees.
Okay.
The indication is that, at least for what seems to be political expediency, they're going to be deported back to their home countries as quickly as possible.
This is Jeanette DiMello on Register Radio. I'm speaking to Peter Jesserer Smith, who's a reporter at the Register, about the immigration crisis at the U.S.-Mexican border. Peter, you know, one question that is really important that we discuss in these final moments is, what has the reaction been from the Catholic community? We've heard from the bishops. Bishop Kincannis and other bishops have really said this is a humanitarian crisis. We need to respond to this crisis. But there have been a variety of responses from Catholics. Can you characterize what you've heard from Catholics other than the bishops?
The variety of Catholics is profoundly mixed, and often it gets caught up in our current immigration debate, which is frozen between border security and securing economic opportunities for those at home, and the comprehensive immigration reform that would deal with not only the labor demands of the country, but also the status of 11 million people who are living in the shadows. So that's part of where this whole recent discussion kind of gets framed. There have been concerns by many concerned Catholics about how things are going on. And you have Catholics such as former Senator Rick Santorum, who has basically said this is a crisis that is in part caused by the president's own policies, creating a deferred action program for not deporting certain children of illegal immigrants who've been here through no fault of their own. But that's getting translated back down to Central America as the United States has allowed permisos or permits for women and children who come here. That's what the coyotes apparently have been telling them, and they've been making a killing in getting them there. So there is, it's mixed. There's a lot of, actually, even for people who say they can't come to this country, there is concern, however, for the humanitarian issues that they feel have been caused by the president sending mixed messages to the people in these countries.
Well, certainly this is a problem that we need to contact our senators about. I mean, it rests on the president's shoulders, but it also rests with Congress. And Peter, thank you so much for being on the show. There's a ton to talk about because this is a very complex subject. Our listeners can follow Peter Jesserer Smith's writing at the Register. He's got two stories recently about immigration, and we will look for many more stories from Peter on this topic. Thank you so much, Peter, for being with us.
Excellent. Thank you, Jeanette.
Thank you, Peter. When we return, we'll talk with ethics professor Christopher Kaiser for his take on the immigration crisis. This is Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. More in a moment.
I'm Brian Patrick, and here at EWTN News Nightly, we're very much aware our world is changing rapidly. The news can be so troubling, but it helps to get it in the context of Catholic teaching. That's why I encourage you to watch EWTN News Nightly and to subscribe to the print edition of the National Catholic Register. Always faithful, in-depth coverage of crucial issues like religious freedom, the sanctity of all human life, traditional marriage, and Pope Francis, his travels, his powerful homilies, and great features like one of my favorites on St. Joseph, provider and protector. Subscribe to the print edition of the National Catholic Register and watch EWTN News Nightly, the perfect combination for faithful Catholics who want the news, who want the truth.
For a free 3-issue trial of the National Catholic Register, go to EWTN.com and click on the banner for the Register, or call 800 421-3230 for your three free issues.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
And welcome back. Along with Jeanette DeMello, I'm Tom Price. Our next guest, Christopher Kaiser, is the William E. Simon Visiting Fellow in Religion and Public Life in the James Madison Program at Princeton University and is Professor of Philosophy at Loyola Marymount University in Los Angeles. He has authored 11 books, including The Seven Big Myths About the Catholic Church and The Ethics of Abortion, to name just two. Dr. Kaiser's research on issues of ethics, philosophy, and religion have been featured in the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, the LA Times, National Review, the BBC, EWTN, and others. Chris, welcome to Register Radio.
Thank you very much.
Chris, it's so great to have you. You know, this immigration crisis that the U.S. is facing right now is a really complex problem. You know, our first guest on this show, Sister Norma Pimentel, works for Catholic Charities in the Rio Grande Valley, and she said she put a human face on this situation. And then our next guest, Chris, was Register reporter Peter Jesserer Smith, and he highlighted the frustrations over the U.S. immigration policy and the fact that our politicians haven't yet found a workable solution. You know, Catholics often disagree over this immigration situation, over policy. And as an ethics professor, I thought that you might be able to give us some guidelines at how we can look at this situation from the point of view of what is moral and what the church teaches about it.
Sure, I'd be happy to try. Well, the foundation of all the church's teachings in terms of ethics is the fundamental dignity of all human beings. And this respect for the human person is at the core of Catholic teaching on a whole wide range of issues, including Catholic social thought. So the Pope recently talked about the idea that that we ought to respect immigrants and give them the dignity that is theirs and not have a kind of racist or xenophobic attitude towards them. And I think that's absolutely right. I mean, the children that are here are children, and they're made in God's image, and so they need protection, they need help, and, you know, if they need aid and such, we really need to help them out. Another part of Catholic social teaching that I think is relevant for this issue is the promotion of the family. And this consideration actually can weigh on either side of the issue, in the sense of some people could appeal to this and say, well, we need to bring the families, the adults, the parents, to the United States so they can be reunited with their children. On the other hand, the same consideration can also be used to weigh in favor of returning the children back to their families.
Right.
And one thing that's important to remember about both this situation and Catholic social thought is we have to take into account not just the immediate situation, but also the long-term consequences. So one danger, and this is not the only consideration, but it is one relevant consideration, one danger is if the children who have been smuggled into the United States are allowed to stay here and get citizenship, what that might do is encourage other people
right.
to smuggle children, you know, into the United States so that they, too, can get citizenship. And this is quite dangerous because, from what I understand, often these children undertake a very long and dangerous journey, and there's no parental oversight, you know, of the children during this long journey. And that can be quite detrimental. So I think it's important to think about not just the sort of current situation, but also what the policies will do long term. In other words, in terms of incentivizing people, you know, to do this sort of journey and undertake these sort of risks.
That's right. And, you know, Catholic social teaching does balance the country's rights to protect its border as well as the rights of the migrant to seek a better situation, a better place to live, a safer place to live. And so I think we're seeing some of that dynamic. So often, if you listen to the voices of the debate, there seems to be a conflict, though, between what is a just response, you know, maybe meeting out the consequences of the law, and then a humanitarian response. Is there really a either or here, or are they mutually exclusive, the just response and the humanitarian response?
Well, I think in this situation, I think and hope that they can both work together. When children are before the law, when children do something that violates the law, they're treated very differently than adults. So even think of murder. You know, if you have a 25-year-old man who murders someone, that's an entirely different thing than a 5-year-old who, you know, accidentally kills his mom or something, which unfortunately that sometimes happens.
Mm-hmm.
So the law recognizes, I think, very clearly that especially small children are not held responsible in the same way that adults are. So what would a compassionate response look like here? I'm not sure that there's a single right answer, but one possibility is this, that the people who are smuggling the children into the United States, those are adults. And so those people need to be held accountable in the way that adults are held accountable. But little children, you know, especially five-year-olds or something, obviously are not held accountable in the same way as our adults. So I think it would be unreasonable to punish them as if they were adults or as if they understood the law and things like that. But that's it's a very different situation for the adults right. that are, you know, smuggling the children into the country. So I'm hoping that both justice and compassion can be brought together. And I think in this case, as in many cases, it will require a great deal of thought in terms of both the immediate consequences of whatever is chosen and also the long-term consequences. And we have to also balance, as you point out, the common good of the people in these areas with the good also of the individual individuals who have come to the United States. So both of these are relevant. I think it would be a mistake to only consider the good of the individuals who come here and completely ignore the communal welfare, or the reverse, to say, well, all that matters is the communal welfare, so we're not going to take into account these individual cases and these individual people. So I think both things are relevant. And I think with this immigration issue, you know, like many issues, it's possible that reasonable people might disagree about right. specific policies and how to implement them.
Yeah, right, right. And we certainly are seeing that. So Chris, thanks so much for providing some clarity in the way we can think about this. You know, I just want to echo what the Pope has said this week. You mentioned he told us to get away from the racist and xenophobic attitudes, but he also said that the humanitarian response is the first response that we should have. But that wasn't alone. He mentioned that the country of origin really needs to figure out ways of better providing for the people who were there so that they don't feel forced to leave because of violence or because of a lack of job. And so we really need to take a look at this from both sides. And I'm very appreciative for the measured thoughts that you have on the subject. So thank you very much.
Oh, thank you very much. I'm happy to talk to you.
Don't forget, you can listen to our show again by going to ncregister.com. Look for that picture of the microphone to listen to or download the show. Thanks for joining us this time on Register Radio. For our producer, Elena Rodriguez, Jeanette, and all of us at the Register and here at EWTN, I'm Tom Price. See you next week.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.